Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday, the 9th of July. Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, never seems to leave the headlines, and today is no exception. Last week was no exception, although it was a holiday week, so this caught some by surprise. The administration released a 606-page final regulation on some of the health care law's most key provisions, how the key Medicaid expansion and health insurance marketplaces are going to work. And they also included a number of delays that until last Friday, nobody knew about. The rule requiring companies with more than 50 employees to provide coverage or faced fines is being delayed for an entire year. It's now on hold until 2015 after the 2014 midterm elections, which has led some to question whether or not this was a political move. But there are a lot of questions about this. The question can be asked, was the whole plan put together a little bit too hastily? Do we need more time for certain elements to roll out? And will there be substantial legal challenges to parts of this before it even goes into effect? We'll have two guests with us this hour. Tom Howell joining us momentarily, a reporter for the politics desk for the Washington Times, who has written about a couple legal challenges recently. Judy Solomon will join us later this hour, vice president for health policy at the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. And we would like to hear from you. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email, talk@WPR.org. Facebook page, where you can always leave messages, is The Kathleen Dunn Show. Tom Howell Jr. is our first guest, reporter, politics desk for The Washington Times. Hello, Tom. Thanks so much for being with us.
Hi, thank you.
Let me just ask why you think the Obama administration delivered this 606-page final regulation with some major announcements on a holiday weekend.
Yeah, well, first of all, last week, the big one here was the employer mandate. They did it a few days before July 4th. That was even ahead of the 606-page ruling you're talking about. And it was kind of in an odd way. It was in two blog posts, one from the Treasury, one from the White House. And this mandate had kind of caused a lot of stir, a lot of consternation among business owners. You might remember some of the fast food chains, some pizza chains, saying they might have to bump workers to part-time status because they couldn't afford given the coverage. It kind of caught a lot of people off guard. And it was became clear, at least in the White House explanation, that the reporting requirements were just very complex and they needed more time. They've couched it as, providing businesses more flexibility, if you will.
There have been some who have said that they just don't want it to be an issue for the midterm elections. Do you think politics was at play here at all?
Well, politics is always at play.
Yeah, I guess so.
And it comes down to perspective. On the one hand, Republicans are saying, it's kind of a cynical ploy. On the other hand, you could argue they're trying to have it both ways by saying, hey, you don't have the authority to delay this as much as it, delights them. So there's a lot of moving parts, and the theory is that if you put it off to 2015, Republicans maybe in the short term can raise hay, which they're doing right now. However, if people who don't really follow this every day don't feel any pain right on the cusp of the election, that's not going to be a big deal. So maybe they took this out of the Republicans' arsenal heading into the election.
In terms of people who are in need of coverage and wanting to avail themselves of one of the exchanges, do you think that there has been enough information put out there so people can understand all of this? Or is it a case of this plan just not being unfolded in as complete a manner as it should be?
Somewhat in the eye of the beholder, because there's this kind of this strain of thought that the administration didn't want to advertise something that didn't exist yet. A lot of experts say it's very hard to market a product that doesn't really exist because, the open enrollment on the exchanges won't start till October 1st. On the other hand, this is a very complex law. Polls show that people really don't understand it, and unless you're following it, a lot of people who follow it every day still have a hard time wading through it. So an argument could be made, you start earlier, educate people. But again, there's also the thought they didn't want to do it too soon with nothing to show for it.
Mm-hmm. What do you think? You follow this as a reporter. Is it very complex?
Yeah, I would say so.
I've been
following this issue since the start of the year. And there's still times, just the many layers and the fact that the kind of integrated parts, because the employer mandate is delayed, there's a fear that some individuals who are banking on coverage from their employer might be now thrown into the exchanges if they meet the income level required. So maybe the subsidies will cost even more. So there's this really delicate balance on these moving parts of how much this will cost, the revenue versus the cost. So, it's very intricate.
And do you have any sense, Tom, on there are, 17 states or something like that that have their own mechanisms for setting up the exchanges, and then you have the federal government running a lot of states, including Wisconsin's. Is one of those systems more up and running than another, or up and ready to be running?
It's hard to say. I mean, the GAO, the Government Accountability Office, said there were some concerns with the federal government missing some delays. Of course, people, trumpeted that as a major flaw. Also, showed that it is on its way. The administration, if you take its word for it, says they will be ready October 1st. That remains to be seen. You could argue that these 16 states and the District of Columbia who took on the task themselves were, they only have to worry about their own state. They were more gung-ho about this from the start. They got started early. I'm here in the District of Columbia. I used to cover City Hall. I know during the formation of all this, they were very much engaged, very much on board. So they started early. The federal government didn't really bank, I think it's pretty well known, they didn't bank on so many states declining the test. They thought states would like the ability to tailor the exchange towards their own communities. However, a lot of states, most Republican-led, said, no, you could take care of it. And so federal government is left with this task and remains to be seen if they're up to the task.
And before we talk about your article on Monday, the fight over twin mandates and the new health care law, I find this really interesting that the administration has decided that Major League Baseball, the National Football League, other large sports franchises would be good places to go to get ball players, who, of course, everybody listens to about everything,
right,
to talk about signing up for one of these exchanges and to give some of the basic information. And, of course, that's become a political battle as well.
Right. Yeah, I think the thought was these are athletes, so it exudes kind of this healthful atmosphere. These people are active, screams health, and they're also, they entertain a typically young audience. The young audience will listen to them. That was the thinking, and they want a lot of these younger, healthier people to sign up for the exchanges because then the risk pool has these healthier people, and it's not just people who are joining because they have pre-existing conditions. That's protection they have now. So they don't want a sicker health pool, which could raise premiums. So they want these young folks, and they figured this was a good way to do it. What I've heard last is NFL kind of sent some correspondence that right now they're just not into it.
Right. I did hear somebody yesterday afternoon, I think, on the radio from, I don't know if it was a ball player, the person wasn't identified during the time I was listening, or the manager of the Boston Red Sox who said on the other hand, well, it is the law, and we'll do what we can do to help.
Sure. I mean, when it comes to this law, it's all perspective. It's all
right.
Depends on who you're talking to.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about your piece yesterday, and that concerns the fight over twin mandates in the new health care law that is brewing. Liberty University and the Obama administration at a federal appeals court in Richmond. What's going on?
Well, we found that, there's a lot of different angles, different stories coming out since this surprising delay in the employer mandate. And there are many legal challenges. Liberty University is somewhat unique because they're challenging the whole employer mandate, but also this sort of separate strand concerning the contraception mandate. As you may know, a lot of religious nonprofits and even for-profits are suing over the mandate. They say it violates their beliefs and they shouldn't have to pay for insuring contraception. They just don't want anything to do with it. So in Liberty's case, though, it became kind of an entanglement because the government in this case and two other cases filed notice letting the court know, hey, the other week we decided to delay the employer mandate for a year. So that means the cases that are coming against us are even more unripe for consideration. They wanted to show, no one's been hurt yet. They don't have standing. And now they're saying with this delay, that furthers our point. Some would say, on the other hand, especially opponents of the law, that's a bit unsavory to take your own delay and just try to buttress your argument. So that's kind of what happened there. And again, the contraception mandate is going forward. I think there was some confusion on that. And some people feel it's unfair that you're burdening businesses by having them do the contraception mandate they oppose to you. While on the other hand, not mandating that employers do provide coverage. They see a disconnect there.
And yet the administration says they're trying to accommodate religious beliefs by having people get contraception through policies that the religious organization would not manage, nor would they pay for it.
Right, and that applies to kind of, I guess you say, a middle group. There's actual houses of worship which are exempt. There are for-profit corporations which are not exempt. And then there's this group in the middle, kind of faith-based nonprofits like hospitals, universities.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, okay, we'll try to accommodate you. In February, they had a kind of a preliminary rule. They said you can make sure your employers get it, but insurers and third-party administrators will handle it. They'll pay for it. You'll be totally, as an employer who objects, divorced from it. You won't have to worry about it. They kind of, most people, you know, the America's Catholic bishops, they kind of rejected that. And now recently they finalized that rule. Administration, despite the objections, has kind of said, no, we've made up our mind. This is how we're going to approach this. So some Catholic groups, including hospitals today, said they're okay with that, whereas others say, no, it's still not good enough.
Mm-hmm.
We need an exemption.
Is this Liberty University lawsuit alone, or are there other places in the country who have also filed suit?
When it comes to the, there are various lawsuits still hanging out there, despite, you know, the big battle royale that happened last year. Many of them are over the contraception mandate, and it's based on that those religious objections we were talking about. There are a few dozen from for-profit, and then there are another few dozen from these religious nonprofits that are kind of in two camps. And you might have heard of Hobby Lobby. That's a craft store based in Oklahoma. A religiously devout family owns it. And they've been kind of the most high-profile plaintiff on the for-profit side, and they gained a some temporary relief from the mandate from a circuit court out in Colorado recently. So they chalked that up as a victory, at least for now.
Mm-hmm. John Boehner said that even the Obama administration knows that the train wreck, referring, of course, to Obamacare, will only get worse. Are they hoping that will happen, or do you think that it will have problems down the road, significant problems?
It's hard to say. It depends on which facet. You know, some facets could go out smoothly, some could not. The administration has said that, you know, they try to lower expectations somewhat, and they said it won't always be smooth. There have been other programs, like under the Bush era when they had the Medicare Part D. You know, sometimes things don't always go as planned. You have to kind of weather the storm. Certainly Republicans are kind of hoping that this law fails, because their goal, and they've said it over and over, is a repeal. So they'd be delighted if it does fail. That's kind of the push-pull that's been here. They argue against it, whereas the administration tries to push it, and it's kind of this back and forth where the administration says they feel like they're being underfunded and set up to fail. So, again, all perspective.
Well, considering what happened last week, isn't it going to be hard to determine whether or not it's at all successful for a couple of years?
Yeah, I think no matter who you are, no matter where you're coming from, you can see this as a setback for the administration, because it kind of undermines faith in the ability to roll things out on time, especially when you have assurances from the administration that October 1st they'll be ready, all systems go. It might be separate components in the mandate, but it all kind of speaks to this atmosphere of uncertainty.
Let's welcome phone calls. We're talking about Obamacare again this hour of the program. It seems as though we've been talking about health care for years, and indeed we have. But there were a couple things that happened last week. A lot of attention paid to this part of the law, and it's been somewhat controversial, I guess, developments from the decision by the White House to delay by one entire year the employer mandate that requires employers with 50 or more full-time workers to provide health insurance that meet defined standards of pay care. We want to know what you think about that. Later in the hour, we'll hear more about the regulations on Medicaid expansion and health insurance marketplaces and how those are going to work and how the people who are perhaps a little bit wealthier, so they wouldn't be eligible for Medicaid, will fit into this whole insurance program. Will there be all over the country lots and lots of people who are working, who are making not enough money to be able to afford health insurance? What's going to happen to all those people? So we'll talk about that with our second guest. Our phone number, Tom Howell, is with us the first part of the show. He is a reporter, politics desk for the Washington Times. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. Email talk at WPR.org, Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're also on Twitter. That's at K Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. To your phone calls now for Tom, 800-486-8655 is our number. Bob in Marshfield is our first caller. Hi, Bob.
Hello there.
Hi.
It perplexes me that the politicians, particularly the business-oriented Republicans, don't wake up and recognize that the Germans or the Europeans in general are paying 11% for health care. We're paying close to 19%. If we're going to compete with them, GE with Siemens, Ford with Volkswagen, if we don't wake up and get a similar system, we are not going to be competitive. Plus, they have a lot better system than we do.
Tom?
Yeah, well, that was kind of the sentiment that you heard a lot of in the formation, and you hear now of this law. The idea was that the system's broken and we need to fix it. The disconnect kind of came in the approach. The administration said, hey, this is a model that can work. We feel it will work and make us a better country forward. Republicans didn't like especially the mandate aspect. Now the question becomes, okay, if this is repealed, do you have a better replacement? They say they do. It kind of uses some of the same tactics. However, it doesn't have the same kind of mandates, what they consider a government intrusion on healthcare. So certainly, you know, this idea of a European style medical system that came up in the idea of a single payer system during the formation law. However, they opted not to go that route. So certainly something that was on the table. And of course, it comes down to so many various perspectives in such a large country that we have, you know, 300 million people. It's often associated with, you know, countries like in Western Europe, but also it is much larger in a lot of different perspectives. I think sometimes it becomes a more unwieldy political question.
Thank you, Bob. You would hope, though, and we don't seem to be able to accomplish this, that you could put forward a plan that everybody would be able to understand. Everything is so complicated with our healthcare system, isn't it, from all parts of the system?
Yeah, that's kind of the trade-off of trying to tackle something that's so ambitious. Sometimes the complications can get in the way, and you're seeing a little bit of that now.
We go to Juliana in Milwaukee next. Hi, Juliana.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. Are you able to hear me?
Yes.
Oh, okay, good. My comment is about young people who see no need to buy health insurance. They're being very cocky. We are all vulnerable to a tragedy or an emergency. Case in point, I had a friend about 10 years ago, no health insurance, appendectomy, complications. Before he knew it, he was over $30,000 in debt. That's my comment, and I'm going to hang up and listen.
All right, Juliana.
And thanks again for this neat program.
Thanks for the call. Uh-huh. Bye. Tom, you mentioned young people.
Yeah, obviously that's always a concern, that young people have this kind of invincibility complex, and you know, when the reality is they don't know what's around the corner. As I mentioned, the administration is very hopeful that young people will come around and get health insurance. You know, they already did put in that provision, which they touted a lot, that youngsters can stay on their parents' plan until they're in their upper 20s. That was something in there already. But as far as the exchanges, again, they're very much hoping, you know, they went with that pro sports league idea, that they come in, they're healthy people who kind of even out the risk pool, so premiums don't go up. Also, you kind of see young people, you know, you look at the job market now, some of their other concerns. You might be able to argue that sometimes health insurance falls down their priority list because they're dealing with other things, student debt, et cetera. That could also be a component.
Yeah, well, that's understandable, and jobs that don't pay a whole lot of money. So all health insurance premiums, if you're not making very much money, seem to be pretty expensive.
Yeah.
Although there is a cap, isn't there, on the percentage of your income that could go to health care costs?
I believe so. Yeah, I don't know the ins and outs of it, but there are various caps on you know, when you qualify, how much of your income, you know, what kind of subsidies you'll get if so much of your income has to be spent on healthcare. And that's kind of the idea. You offer these subsidies to get people who, you know, especially young people who think the healthcare is out of reach, say, no, look at this. Here's how we can assist you through the tax code and make sure you get covered.
Let's spend just a few minutes at the time that we have left with you talking about small businesses. We hear these overall general complaints. Small businesses are really complaining about this. They're lessening the number of employees they have, so they make sure they get below 50 employees and won't be having to offer health insurance. From your examination of this, are there a lot of valid complaints that small businesses have?
Yes and no. It's been pointed out in the last week or so that, and the White House tried to point this out yesterday, that obviously the decision to delay the employer mandate has huge political ramifications. But another question is whether it has a real-world implications, because we're talking about, first we're talking about businesses that have 50 or more workers, so that cuts it down quite a lot. And then we're talking about employers who don't already offer insurance.
And most of the companies do, right?
Right. And so the number I saw recently was about 10,000 employers we're talking about, which cuts it down to a pretty small number, but it's still, you know, those are real people, real businesses, and, you know, there's been a large outcry, a lot of lobbying from the businesses. So, you know, especially when you have these high-profile complaints, like I mentioned, the fast food chains, and people especially talking to their lawmakers saying, hey, look, I might have to cut hours. I might have to shift people over to part-time. They're defining full-time workers as people who work 30 hours instead of 40. When has that ever been the case? You know, these kind of things. So it did kind of become a problem, this mandate. And you heard even some Democrats, like Senator Joe Donnelly from Indiana, he proposed a bill with Susan Collins from Maine that said, hey, we should define full-time workers as 30. So they're hearing it from their constituents. And once you get even Democrats talking about tweaking the law, that's when things kind of start to loosen up and it shakes up how Washington approaches this.
Mm-hmm. Tom, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Tom Howell, our first guest. He is a reporter, politics desk for The Washington Times. We are talking about various aspects of the Affordable Care Act that have been changed, actually, as a result of some provisions and final regulations that were released last week by the administration. The rule requiring companies with more than 50 employees to provide coverage or face fines, which affects some, as you heard Tom say, 10,000 companies in this country, is being delayed by a year. There are also a 606-page final regulation on how the Medicaid expansion and health insurance marketplaces will work, and these are delays that people didn't know about until last week. So we're going to continue our conversation talking about those and welcome your phone calls as well. Judy Solomon, our guest now, and Judy is a vice president for health policy at the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. She focuses on Medicaid and the Children's Health Insurance Program and also issues related to the implementation of health reform, particularly policies to make coverage available and affordable for low-income people. Our phone number remaining, 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. The Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. We're at Twitter at K Dunn Show. Judy, hello. Thank you so much for being with us.
And thank you for having me, Kathleen.
We were surprised by this rule concerning 50 employees. Were you surprised by all of these new regulations on how Medicaid expansion and health insurance marketplaces will work? Was there anything that kind of caught you by surprise?
Not really, because this rule was a rule that was proposed in January, and I, like many others here in D.C. and elsewhere, analyzed it and submitted comments on it. So we were really awaiting it and expecting it. It, of course, came on Friday when many of us were not around, but I think we've had a chance since then to absorb much of it. And there really isn't all that much that's different from what was originally proposed.
Mm-hmm. I think the general question that people have in states like Wisconsin that have not taken the funds for Medicaid expansion, there's been a lot discussed concerning people who are working people who are making not enough money to be able to afford insurance on the exchange, but are making too much to be able to be covered by Medicaid. And I'm wondering if you could address those people, please.
Sure. I mean, there is going to be in some states, actually not in Wisconsin, because you're doing a little bit of an expansion so that people have a coverage gap. But in many states, and Wisconsin actually has been a leader in providing coverage to adults. In many states, adults who don't have children are not eligible today for Medicaid at all, and low-income parents have to have income that's well below the poverty line. In those states that haven't expanded, that are not expanding Medicaid, those poor adults, many of them will be left out because you can't qualify for the new premium tax credits, which are aimed at the people who have income above the Medicaid level. You can't qualify for those if your income is below the poverty line. The assumption is that all those people would be in Medicaid. So there, in a number of states, there is going to be a coverage gap. It's kind of different than what we've experienced, because instead of people earning too much to qualify, they're going to earn too little to qualify.
And how many people would fall into that classification? A lot?
A lot. I mean, because we're looking at states like Texas, Florida, Georgia, that have large numbers of uninsured people today and don't provide poor adults with coverage under Medicaid for the most part. So it's that group in those states and a number of others. It's only about half the states that, as of right now, have decided to take up the expansion. We're hoping that a few more join that group. But right now, it really is going to mean that large numbers of people, millions of poor adults, will not have a pathway to coverage.
Mm. Well, that was part of the very population that the Affordable Care Act was trying to reach, wasn't it?
It was. And I think the design was certainly that there would be a pathway to everyone. Unfortunately, with states being given the choice, and states, a number of states, not taking advantage of really what is a great deal for them, the federal government is going to pick up the costs. And in most states, you've seen studies that show that it's not only that it's being paid by the federal government to cover people, but that states will actually gain because some of the services they're providing now to uninsured people for mental health and substance abuse and so on, that the state is paying totally for, would be picked up as people get coverage. So it is unfortunate, but it's really based on the decisions that the states have made.
So how do you see this playing out after a while? Some people look at other states and say, hey, you have a better thing going than we do, and so we'll change and accept some of this money?
I think that's what really will happen over time. And, you know, we saw a little bit of that when we saw, for example, in Arizona, Governor Brewer. That was exactly what you just said, is exactly what she said. She looked at the neighboring states around her and said, wow, you know, they're all expanding. We're going to be in a position that is not as competitive as they are.
We were talking with Tom about the complexity of all of this and wondering if part of the reason for the rule requiring companies with more than 50 employees to provide coverage, that being delayed by a year, was just, as some have suggested, that the fact that the administration has put together a fairly ambitious plan with not enough time to iron out the details and to get everybody behind them, so delays would have to be inevitable. Was that the reason, or is it still such a political football that they wanted to wait till after the midterms were over so people couldn't argue about Obamacare?
I think it's the former. I think the employers really said that this was a very difficult provision for them to fulfill, and that, you know, getting the information and getting it into a form would be difficult. And I think, you know, they were heard, and there was a delay. I mean, as we've written and said, you know, from the perspective of people getting coverage, which is, you know, what our real perspective is here at the Center on Budget, it really is not going to have an impact, because I think, as your first caller noted, we're really talking about a small subset of employers large employers generally offer coverage. It's not likely they're going to drop coverage because of a one-year delay, and the people who don't have an offer of coverage will continue to be able to get it in the new marketplaces or through Medicaid in states that expand. So it really doesn't change what happens from the perspective of people getting coverage, which is really one of the probably the major goal of the Affordable Care Act, of health reform or Obamacare or whatever we want to call it.
And let's talk about young people. Obviously, to make the system work, you have to have people who are healthy who are not going to use as much health care as older people to help defray some of the costs here. Do you anticipate problems with young people who are just out in the workforce and maybe not making a huge amount of money and figuring, you know, they're invincible, as we tend to think when we're young people, and so they just don't want to get health insurance, and they'd much prefer to pay what they would see to be a much smaller fine than they would have to pay if they got health insurance?
I think it's going to be mixed. I think there certainly will be some people like that, but, you know, we've talked to young people, and there's people out there working with young people, and, you know, we hear a kind of different story, that they actually want coverage. They understand the risks of going without it, particularly for their long-term economic prospects. If you do have an illness or an accident or saddled with debt, it's going to follow you. Many of these young people already have debt from their student loans and elsewhere. So I think they see it. One of the things that I think is really important is for people to really understand how the subsidies work and how, you know, you can really use those subsidies in a way wisely to get, you know, to get covered in a way that's affordable for you and still provides that protection. So they're going to have a lot of choices, young people. They obviously also, many of them have the choice of enrolling in their parents' plan, with the change requiring employers to cover young people up to 26. They will have, you know, the choice of the premium credits. They will be a little cheaper for them than for older people, the coverage, if they're not going to get a premium credit. So I think they have a lot of choices, and it's going to be important that they understand them and then pick what's best for them.
Mm-hmm. And Judy, at this point, I really believe that there are a whole lot of people that have absolutely not a clue where you go to find out about all of this information, even if you're in the situation where you need to use it.
I think that's probably right. There is this tension between giving out information before you have something to really to offer and then waiting too long.
Mm.
So I think we're getting to the point where, you know, the information is out there. The new website is up, healthcare.gov. People, there's a chat function. You can talk to someone. I think they have some, you know, state-by-state information. Some of the groups are now going out there and trying to raise awareness. But it really is always a fine line to cross of trying to raise awareness, but at the same time not open the door to having people think they can get this coverage today. It's still January till they can get it.
Oh, January, you'll be here in a minute.
Yeah, right? Feels that way.
Yeah, Judy Solomon is our guest this part of the show, Vice President for Health Policy at the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. Her focus is on Medicaid and the Children's Health Insurance Program and the issues that relate to the implementation of health reform. Our conversation prompted by the final regulation the Obama administration released last week on some of the healthcare law's key provisions, Medicaid expansion and health insurance marketplace, and the companies with more than 50 employees provide coverage or get fined. All of that is being delayed for a year. So what do you think about all of this? We certainly welcome your phone calls. You may have specific questions about Medicaid expansion and low-income people availing themselves of health care reform and what policies are in place. I still have some questions about, I think the figure when we started all these conversations were 47 million people in this country were uninsured. with the rollout of the plan, will we see a significant reduction in the number of uninsured? What about those populations that will be difficult to insure, and how do we go about doing that? The political response to all of this, which continues and probably will for some time. What do you think? Our phone number, please join the conversation, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. You can send an email if you'd like. That's talk@wpr.org. Or our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hour two of our program, the National Institutes of Health announced that they plan to substantially reduce the use of chimpanzees in biomedical research. We'll have individuals with us who support the NIH and someone who argues that testing on chimps is still crucial to improving human health. So that's coming up the second hour of our show. Healthcare this hour, our guest, Judy Solomon, Vice President for Health Policy at the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. Again, our phone number is 800-486-8655, and the phone calls are coming in right now pretty steadily, but let me just ask before we go to the first one. Let's just go to the first one. I'll ask you this later, Judy. John in Fitchburg. Hi, John.
Good morning, Kathleen.
Hi,
my
John.
My question has to do with your guest just mentioned that some people, they qualify for health care tax credits, but they have to pay out of pocket for their health insurance and then later get the tax credits, and the cash flow just doesn't seem to work real good there for a lot of folks. The timing of it, is there any provision to take care of that?
That's a great question. There actually is a provision. You're right that this is a tax credit, so one would think you don't get it until you file your taxes. But for exactly the reason that you said, you have to pay for your health insurance every month. There is, the credits are actually paid in advance directly to the insurer each month. So when you apply, they decide how much you should get each month in an advance credit, and then that amount is paid to the insurer. And then, depending on the plan you pick and your income, you would pay the difference. When you file your taxes at the end of the year, it all gets sort of evened out. If your credit was a little too small, maybe you thought your income was going to be more than you told them it was going to be, then you'll get some more credit than if it was, if you got too much money, you might have to pay a little bit back. So it's going to be important for people to try to make an estimate that's as close as possible. But you're absolutely right. There's no way most people could afford to pay the money up front and then wait till they file their taxes to get it back then.
Well, thank you. That's good news.
Thank you, John.
Thanks for the information you're putting out. I appreciate it.
Thanks for the call. Let's go to Tim in Wausau. Hi, Tim.
Hi.
Hi.
I have a question. As far as I work for a very large employer in the state of Wisconsin, and our insurance is covered by our union. The company, it's negotiated through our contracts. The company pays so much to the union to cover our pension and our health care. And like for the last 11 years, our insurance has been so expensive, it's gotten more and more expensive that our union has apologized, but they've had to keep spending almost all the money per employee towards our health care. Because our pension has not gone up, or the fund hasn't had any real increases in the last, like I said, 10, 11 years because of the health care, the way it has been rising so much. And I'm just always curious about what is Obamacare going to do to people like us that have always had pretty good insurance, although our insurance has gotten worse because it has gotten more expensive. We've had higher deductibles and so on and so forth. Is this going to help us at all, or is it going to affect us at all as far as our large fund and our large amount of people in our healthcare plan?
It really isn't going to affect you directly in the short term. Where I think it could have an effect is that, it's not mostly we've been talking about the coverage and all of that, but there's a lot more in the law that really is aimed at bringing down the cost of healthcare over time, and it's really stemming the rate of increase. Keeping healthcare costs, as you said, they're going up faster than people's earnings, faster than inflation overall. So there are things that are really aimed at changing medical practice, changing the way that care is delivered. Most of them are aimed at the Medicare program, but that's in part because the notion is that Medicare is kind of the leader and the private sector follows the practices in Medicare. And I think, you know, in the private sector, they are starting to do more of these things in terms of trying to bring down costs. But that, you know, the law was really designed not to really have a great impact on coverage that comes through unions and employers. I think the notion was that, you know, that was working and not to really upset that too much, and to really focus on how to provide coverage for the people who don't have a pathway, either because their employer doesn't offer it or the employer offers it and it's just not affordable to them.
As you well know, Judy, there have been some news organizations that have done and are doing major exposés on the cost of health care in this country. Is that the next thing? Not that they are capable of doing much these days, but is this the next thing that Congress ought to be examining? Is the reason why health care costs that Tim just talked about are so high?
I think as I said, I think a lot of that actually is going on. It's not as, you know, in the news as the things that we're all focused on with the implementation of the coverage provisions coming up so quickly. But there are a lot of things in the law to change the delivery system, to increase provider capacity and so on, that really are directed at trying to stem the growth, because everyone knows that is a major problem that is affecting everyone mm-hmm. and the economy as a whole.
Right. Thanks, Tim. Sharon in Waukesha, hi.
Hi, I have a question. You talked about people that are difficult to insure. What about students who aren't working, going to school, and have no income? Or if they have assets, will they be able to, they have no disability, they're not able to go on Medicaid normally?
They will be, you know, these single adults that have never really been covered in Medicaid, and I'm assuming you're talking about, you know, students who probably are over 21 and, you know, or so they're not sort of part of their parents' family for the purposes of Medicaid. They do have already, this you know, really took effect in 2010. If their parents happen to have an offer of employer coverage, they do have that ability now to enroll in that. But if they don't have that and they have no income, or if they have a, you know, small income, that students often have, they will have, you know, the pathways either through the Medicaid program, which will now cover them, assuming they're in a state that has taken up the expansion, or if their income is above the poverty line, which in many cases it is, they would have the ability to get the premium tax credits and enroll in the new marketplaces.
What if it's below that and they don't have a path, they don't have a state that's...
Those are the people that are in the gap. That's the unfortunate people that are in that coverage gap.
Mm. Okay, thank you.
Thanks for the call. That brings to mind this question. I think the figure was something like 47 million people who were uninsured at the time this whole debate began. Do we have any idea at all, Judy, how many more will be covered as when this rolls out?
Yeah, I mean, there's estimates that the Congressional Budget Office has made. You know, they assume that I'm actually pulling it out as we speak, so we can
okay
be exact. I'm really bad at remembering numbers, but I think the assumption is there'll be 25 million fewer uninsured people by 2023,
mm-hmm.
which is 10 years from now, and you know that number starts ramping up in 2014 and continues to go up as we approach. Actually, it gets to 25 by 2016. So you know, within a relatively short period of time, we'll have a lot more people with insurance.
Let's go to Christine in Madison. Hi, Christine.
Hi, I wanted to just make some remarks about younger people getting insurance. I advised undergraduate students at the University of Wisconsin for many years, and there were a lot of students who, I mean, luckily now they can stay on a parent's insurance until they're 26, but a lot of students who needed health insurance, and maybe if they were sick or there was something that happened in their family and they really should have been able to drop out for a semester, but they couldn't because they hung in there because they needed the health insurance. And then a lot of kids who have minor pre-existing conditions, and when they did get out of college, it was so hard to get insured. Our own daughter, once she got out, had needed a medication that she needed a prescription for, and she had to pay $500 on for insurance, and we could help her. But now I think, I think there are a lot of young people who, once insurance is affordable and they can stand, know that they will get it, but it's pretty awful what they had to pay. Although I want to say one other thing is that once the Obamacare kicked in for some things, it was much easier for her to get in, our own daughter to get insurance, because pre-existing conditions had a limit on what. There were minor pre-existing conditions that lowered health insurance that weren't there before. So I think that a lot of young people know they need insurance, but it's just has been out. They just couldn't afford it.
Mm-hmm. Judy.
I think that's right, and I think you raise a really important point about how health status and health conditions factor in, and that is going to be a huge change in 2014, because today, you know, whether you're young or old, if you have a chronic disease or disability and you're out there shopping for insurance on your own, if you're not getting it through your employer, you have a hard time. It's either going to be too expensive or you may not be able to get it at all. In 2014, insurance will be the same whether you're sick or not. Older people will still be able to be charged more than younger people, but not based on sickness and not based on gender. I mean, women pay today more than men because of the assumption that they're going to have, you know, costs of childbirth and so on. So that's a really, really important change and very, very important to people, you know, as you described your daughter, who've had conditions and had a really hard time getting coverage.
Thanks, Christine. Jerry in Glendale. Hi.
Hi, Kathleen. In Wisconsin, the governor turned down the money to set up the health insurance exchange for citizens here. Two questions. Is there a negative consequence for our citizens to have the federal government set up the exchange? And if there are negative consequences, what are they? Thank you.
Thanks, Jerry.
I think the assumption is that the federal government is really stepping into the shoes of the state. Now, I would say that the consequence is that if the state does it on its own, there are more resources available to help people actually enroll. And it has to do with how the funding streams work. So in a state now like Wisconsin with a federal exchange, you're actually sharing a total of $54 million across the 34 states. In the other states, I'm just going to give you a comparison. In Maryland, a pretty small state, they're going to have $24 million available.
Whoa.
Yeah. So I think that's where the state's going to lose out. I think in terms of the ability of people to enroll for the, you know, technology to submit an application, all of that's going to be in place. It really is going to be what's available on the ground to help them where you're going to see the difference.
Thank you very much, Jerry, for the call. You recommend, are there other places we should go to get the skinny on all of this? Healthcare.gov, any other place?
I think there's a number of groups. Our website, which is www.cbpp.org.
Say that again, please, Judy.
Cbpp.org. org or just centeronbudget.org.
Okay.
Another consumer group, Families USA, has a lot of information, and you know, on these websites will lead you to other places. So the Kaiser Commission on Medicaid and the Uninsured, KFF.org, I think actually should be everyone's first stop for information and resources.
Okay. Thank you very much for all of your information.
Okay. Thank you.
Judy Solomon, Vice President for Health Policy at the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. Her focus on Medicaid and the Children's Health Insurance Program. She knows a lot, as you could discover during our conversation, about the implementation of health reform. She mentioned a bunch of websites. We'll put those on our Facebook page, too, because I know those can you can hear them and you go, what day? What was that? What was that? So our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and that's that. They'll be there. And we'll be on this issue again, as we have for many years now. Thanks to KP Whaley and Rhonda Fanning for producing this program. Thanks for your calls, everybody. We feel like it's old hat now. We've been in this time slot for a week and 2 days. But in case people wonder what happened to our show, we have moved from 9 to 11 to 1 to 3 Monday through Thursday. So that's why we're here and not there. And On Point is there and not here. News is coming up, and stay with us, please. Great hour ahead.